The Health Fix Podcast teaches you how to take charge of your health naturally by giving you the information you need to elevate your health.
Hey there, health junkies. Today I'm interviewing Kathleen Trotter. She has a master's in science and exercise science. She's a personal trainer. She's an author. She's a nutrition and life coach, and she's a wealth of knowledge with over 20 years of experience. She provides one-on-one as well as group coaching online. And today she's going to talk about finding your fit, gamifying your workouts while training your brain so that fitness is fun for life. Let's get on to the podcast. Hello there, health junkies. Welcome to another episode of The Health Fix. I'm your host, Dr. Janine Krause. Today's episode, I have Kathleen Trotter on the line, and we're going to be chatting all about fitness and how we're both kind of addicted to fitness and how we fell in love with fitness and how we want to inspire others to jump on board in the same route. So, Kathleen, welcome to The Health Fix.
Oh, it's my pleasure. I'm super excited to be here. And as I was saying to you in the intro, it's my birthday. So I'm even doubly excited to be here because I love talking about health and fitness. So it's like a birthday present to myself.
And I'm excited that you chose to spend your birthday with me. So even better. So Kathleen,
it's the pockets of joy in life, eh? It's just like the little things. You're just like, yes, this is awesome.
I agree. We have to go after the little things in life. Those are what make the world go round. So tell the Health Fix folks a little bit about how you fell in love with fitness.
So I love it. You keep saying falling in love, and I think it's more appropriate to be said that I was like pushed to be in love. So It's definitely been an extreme gradual process for me, as I think it is for a lot of people. So I was not born loving health and fitness. I'm 6 feet tall, which is super wonderful now. But when I was growing up, I felt very awkward. And, you know, my parents got divorced and I was sad. And I don't know, I kind of ate my way through that experience. And we moved around a lot and I didn't have a lot of friends. And my parents were both in the arts. So I was always much more of the sort of nerdy alone type. Like I'd rather go see a piece of theater than, you know, go for a walk. And eventually my mom, after trying many, many things of like trying to get me into different sports and trying to encourage me to love gym class and like all of the sort of more typical things, she said to me, listen, Kathleen, we got to find a solution. This is like being active has to be a non-negotiable, but I get the fact that you don't love gym class. Like I literally would lie to get out of gym class. I'd pretend to be sick. I snuck food. Like it was bad. And I think my mom was like, oh my God, what do I do? And I really thank my mom for this whole experience because she is the one who really taught me the foundation of my philosophy with fitness, which is you have to find a solution. Exercise has to be a non-negotiable, but the solution has to work for you. So basically we got me a membership to the YMCA. We lived in a really small town and the membership at the demographic at the Y was like, you know, over 45 and under 5. So my mom was like, you've always felt more comfortable with adults. So who cares about, you know, joining a sports team? If that's not your thing, cool. You're going to go walk on the treadmill for 10 minutes. You're just going to start there. And that's where it started. And she kind of pushed me. And then I don't know, it started to become much more just like my thing, my identity, my alone time. 10 minutes turned into 20 minutes, which turned into doing some free weights, which turned into taking some aerobics classes, which turned into me teaching aerobics classes. And gradually it just turned into my identity. Like I no longer was this awkward Kathleen. I was the Kathleen who was fit and active, and I don't know, the why gave me a place. It gave me a community, which is, I think, a really important part of fitness. And it turned health into something that was really discouraging and shaming for me, into something that was empowering and energizing. And it was a creation of an identity. I don't know if you know James Clear, but I love his work, Atomic Habits. And one of the things he says is that every action in life is a vote for the person that you want to be, like vote for the identity that you want to have. And that's what I think was what eventually turned it for me. Like I have become this person that really identifies with feeling good and moving. And therefore I want to create more habits. Like I want to do those things that make me feel like the person I have become. But it's such a gradual process. Like at the beginning, I felt like the person who sat on the sofa and watched TV and felt crappy about myself. So it was this really small, like little wins that turned into slightly bigger wins that turned into bigger wins. And gradually, you know, over the last 20 years, I've become the me of now. Like, and the things that make me happy now are so different from the things that made me happy. Like when I was 15, what made me happy was, you know, eating a bunch of junk food and sitting and watching TV. Now it didn't actually actually make me happy. It made me very sad, but it's what I thought made me happy. And now the things that make me happy are, you know, listening to podcasts, going for a run. Like my birthday has been the best day in the world so far. And what did I do? I got up, I went for a run. I came home. I made a really healthy breakfast. I did a Pilates class at home. I answered some emails. I'm doing this. I listened to some podcasts. Like, these are my recipes for success. But I had to gradually become that person. You know, it doesn't happen overnight, which is, I think, a myth that really gets in people's way when they're trying to adopt a healthy lifestyle. They sort of think like, oh, I'm going to be healthy. And then tomorrow they'll be healthy. They'll be this whole new person. But it doesn't happen that way. And that's unrealistic expectations are the seeds of discontent, right? Like, if you think you're going to be healthy in 24 hours and then you aren't, you're like, oh, well, I failed. I might as well stop. And it's like, no, you didn't fail. It's only been a day. You got to give yourself time. You got to give yourself time to evolve. And you know, so it's almost like changing your taste buds for the things that you like to do and realizing that your future self is always going to be happier if you move. Like, you always feel more productive and happy if you've done a workout, but that takes time to learn. You're always going to feel better if you eat healthy food. But again, that takes time. At the beginning, it's like, you think like, oh, if I work out, I'll just be sore and exhausted or I'll feel awkward. So it's a gradual process, and you got to have compassion for yourself and the learning curve.
I love that you mentioned the concept of it does not happen overnight. I think for a lot of people hearing even it took you 20 years and the fact that you weren't so into going to the gym in the first place, I think that's where a lot of people start and they just are like, okay, I went to the gym 2 days. Why didn't I lose 20 pounds and why am I not like
this? Exactly. Why aren't I fit yesterday? I told myself I was going to be fit. How did it not happen? Yeah, I think so. Part of my story though, the key is that I found my fit, and that's one of the things I really want to get across when I talk is that you have to thrive in your own lane, and getting fit doesn't have to be going to the gym, which is a good thing considering none of us can really go to a gym right now. Like, we're in the midst of this isolation for most of us, right? So this is a great opportunity to find your fit in alternative ways. And it's not that going to the gym is wrong or bad, but it is one version of many of how you can find your fit. And so my first book is called Finding Your Fit, and I outline 4 fitness personalities, with the idea being that one fitness personality is not better than another. It's just the one that works for you. And what matters most is consistency. So you have to make the workout something that you like enough that you'll actually do, or something that you don't despise, and that you can do on a consistent basis, so it's convenient. So, you know, the 4 fitness personalities I go over is, there's the workout, the gym bunny. So that's the person you want to go to the gym. Great. There's the home bunny. You want to make a home gym of a stability ball and a foam roller. Great. You know, you can do the busy multitasker. So that's the person who sort of takes conference calls and you walk around as you walk to and from work. And then there's the competitive bunny, which is like, you know, you join, maybe that's CrossFit or you join sporting teams. And it's a lot of it's just the mindset that you get behind. So if you think that you could only do yoga if you go to a gym, but you know, most yoga classes are 60 to 90 minutes and then you have to get there and then you could have to get home, then you're like, oh, well, I don't have two hours out of my day. I can't do it. Well, I might as well not do it. And it's like, well, no, you can be a yogi and you can do workouts at home. You know, Yoga by Adrian is free and it has like everything from 10 minutes to, you know, 90 minute classes. So it's about finding solutions, but it's about finding solutions that work for you and your life reality. And knowing that those solutions will change, right? So you might be a gym bunny, but now you're in isolation. So guess what? You have to become a home bunny for now. So these things are, it's flexible, as long as you stay on your course, right? The only option that's not good or not okay is the option of like, well, I'll just do nothing, right? As long as you're working and you're trying and you're adapting, then you're winning. You know, you just have to figure out the solution that works for you and really thrive in your lane and respect your realities of the moment.
I think that's huge. I think that's a huge comment because so many people are looking at social media and going, well, I'm going to join that because look at that girl's body. I want to have that body. Or, ooh, look at this person, she does this, so I want to follow her. But then the person gets in there and is like, oh my God, I hate this. This is awful. And
then, absolutely.
On average, what is it? Like maybe a week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks at the most. And then you're like, I quit. This sucks. Now what?
Absolutely. Yeah. Or you get injured because you're trying to work at a level that you haven't earned, right? Like think about fitness as grades of fitness. If you go to grade one, you need to ace grade one. You're not saying, well, I should be doing grade 12 math, right? So you have to ace grade one before you get to grade two, before you get to grade three. And a lot of the times with fitness, what we try to do is, you know, we haven't worked out for a year. We jump into a fitness class and they're at like grade 12 level or they're at a master's level. And then we get injured or we feel really discouraged because we're like, well, I can't do 25 pushups. I'm a failure. It's like, well, no, you're not a failure. You just have never done pushups before, right? Like people all the time will try running and be like, oh, I hate it. I'm so bad at it. And I'm like, well, have you done it before? And they're like, no. And I'm like, well, then of course you should be bad at it, right? Like you don't have to be great. You don't have to be great to start, but you do have to start to be great. And you have to be willing to suck at things a bit to learn to be better. And that's part of the process. So a lot of the fitness is matching where you are to what you're doing. Like what's your fitness abilities currently? Start there. You can always progress as you get stronger. That's one of the best parts about getting stronger. Because you're like, oh, I could only do 5 pushups before. Now I can do 10. But if you start and you can't do 10 pushups, you're not a failure. You just haven't done pushups before. And a lot of the times we're not good at applying the same standards that we would in like business or education to our fitness, right? Like you wouldn't expect to go to a job right out of, you know, university and be the CEO of that company, right? Starting in an entry-level position is not a failure. It's what you do to work up in a job. So I think that's key. I think working at your grade of fitness is key. And I think also knowing that the consistency is really important. So you have to find something where you're not going to get injured, where you're not going to feel discouraged, because it doesn't matter what you do once a month. It matters what you do on a daily basis. And it's, you know, it's much more important to do sort of 20 to 30 minutes regularly than it is to try to do that like crazy 2-hour run or big CrossFit workout that leaves you injured and then on the sofa for the next month. Like that's super discouraging.
And sadly, very common for a lot of folks.
Yes, so common.
I'm going to do this. I saw this 1,000 calorie burn workout and I'm just going to like throw myself into 1,000 burpees or whatever it ends up being. But this is one of the things that I love, that you are a huge proponent of consistency, but also you've taken courses that you can identify someone's movement patterns in terms of, ooh, maybe we need to work on that before we get to the next level for you, or let's start here or start there. Because before, folks, before we jumped on recording, we were talking about Kathleen's certifications as an Eldoa instructor and a Czech practitioner. And both of those different certifications, and we can, I guess, identify them individually, you know, as we go through, but Eldoa has to do with posture and Czech has to do with how you actually move, certain movement patterns that you need to have down so that you don't hurt yourself. Because I don't know how many people in my practice that have come in and said, yeah, I tried running, but I got hurt. Or yeah, I tried CrossFit, but I got hurt.
Absolutely. Yeah. And so many times it's about not getting injured, but it's also about getting the most out of your exercises. So why don't I give you a couple of examples? So let's say you're doing a lot of lunging and squatting, but you don't have really good connection to your glute muscles, because let's say your hip flexor muscles are really hypertonic from like sitting a lot, right? So then you're doing all these squats and your lunges and you're like, Kathleen, why am I constantly hurting my lower back? Or why aren't I getting the glute connection that I want? Or why am I, my body doesn't look the way I want it to look? And then I did a bunch of assessments. So one of the things that the Czech practitioner does is it's like an hour long assessment of how you're moving, what muscles are, you know, short, what's tight, what's hyperfacilitated. So what I see is like, oh, well, you can't connect to your glute muscles. So maybe before you do your squats and your lunges, we have to actually do a couple activation exercises for your glutes. So we do warm-up exercise of monster walk sideways to get into your glute med, or bridges to get into your glute max, or maybe you're not stabilizing your pelvis, so we need to activate your transverse abdominals, or maybe you're in an anterior tilt, so you're sort of arching your lower back. So maybe we need to do some little bit of posterior tilting to get you into normalized posture. Same thing with the Eldoa. Eldoa is all about posture normalization. So let's say you're sitting a lot and you're really rounded forward. So if you're really rounded forward and you're trying to do a row motion for your upper back, guess what? You're not going to be using your upper back muscles. You're going to row your elbows backwards, kind of rounded forward. So before you do an upper body day, maybe what you need to do is a couple Eldoa postures to open up your chest and normalize the posture in your upper back. So it's a lot of it is just, it's awareness of, your movement patterns and intentionally deciding to move well.
So huge, intentionally deciding to move well. Because I think a lot of people will look at, oh, look at that gal in the gym. She's killing it. She's lifting, I don't know, maybe she's back squatting like 200 pounds. Oh my gosh. And then I look at it and I'm going, yeah, she's doing it somehow. I don't know how her body's managing to do it.
Yeah, exactly. Like, how is she doing it without a gin drink herself? For sure. Yeah. People have very poor movement patterns. That is for sure. Or she's doing it with 200 pounds, which is great, but she's been lifting for 20 years, right? Again, it goes back to that sort of like earning the right to lift the 200 pounds. So it could be that she's using sort of poor posture, but it also could be that she's using great posture, but she's just put in a lot of practice. And a lot of fitness is just that repetition and working. And that's why having a goal is really great, because if you have a goal, it can sort of direct you on a path. So if you say, okay, my goal is, let's say, to be able to run. Okay, well, then we break down the components of what you need to be able to run, right? Like, you need good single leg stance to be able to run. Because if you don't have that, when your foot hits the ground, your knee is going to cave in, you're going to arch your back. So then as a practitioner, what I would say to my client is, okay, yes, we have to progress you up to running. So maybe we start you with 90 seconds of jogging versus, you know, 30 minutes of jogging. But we also work on the muscles that you need to be able to dissipate the forces when you run and keep you in good posture so you don't injure yourself going forward. And I think that having both the strength side, the mobility side, and the cardio side of any activity as a goal is really key too, right? Because a lot of people can find it hard to do the things they don't love. So for example, I love, love, love running. I find it harder to make myself do the strength aspect. But what I can say to myself is, Kathleen, you have to do this strength work in order to be able to run injury free. So sometimes you're not always going to love every aspect of your fitness routine, but if you can have one thing that you love, like a sport, then sometimes it can help inspire you to do the biomechanical strength, flexibility things you might not love, but are very needed.
I think that leads us to a really great conversation that we should have on purpose. Like you were saying, having a purpose, because now it makes the strength, say you don't love the strength. You know, in my end, I love the strength, not so much the cardio. I'm kind of opposite in that department, but I've come to like embrace doing all of it because I know that every single piece, like you just said, fits into the end goal, which I'm seeing in this pandemic, but also just, you know, in general, that we've got a lot of different, whether they're in a gym fitness type of setting or whether it's individual trainers online, I'm seeing a lot of folks that don't really get the idea of the end goal, the purpose, the outcome that we're trying to achieve for a certain person. And I think that's really something that for a lot of us, something important to kind of think about, you know. As ladies, let's be honest, we think a lot about like, I'm going to work out and because I'm thinking about losing weight, but we don't think, you know, that's like a lot of times for folks, unfortunately, that's the number one thought. Do you get that commonly?
I mean, I work with a lot of people with specialty populations. So I have clients who have like MS, Parkinson's, athletes. Weight loss, but not so much because the people who I often work with have different goals. And it's actually very motivating for me because, you know, to see somebody who is so grateful to be able to move, like if they have, like, let's say my clients with MS or Parkinson's, or I rehab a lot of clients with injuries, and I can see that the gratitude that they have for motion, but also the desire they have to do other motions that they might not ever actually be able to do. So for me, it's like, if I have a day where I'm like, oh God, I don't want to work out. That's like, no, Kathleen, how dare you think that? Like exercise, like being able to move is such a privilege. And that's definitely one of my key self-talk things is like, this is not something I have to do. This is something I get to do. And so when I do have a client who's really focused on weight loss, it's not that I ever say that's a bad goal because I don't think any goal is necessarily bad, but I do try to say to people that to take it as one of the many goals, to sort of diversify your goals, sort of like with money. Like if you have all of your money in one place, then if that money runs out, then you're like, what do I do? So this idea of like a diversification of goals, because if your goal is to lose weight, and then for some reason you're not able to, let's say, I don't know, it's you're getting older, or you've had an injury or whatever, then it's easy to be like, oh, well, I didn't reach my goal, so I'm going to give up. But if you have a diversification of goals, so it's like, I want more energy, I would like to lose weight, I want to get stronger, I want to be able to run more, then it's like any of the wins in any of the departments will help you moving forward. So go ahead, have a weight loss goal, but make sure it's part of sort of a bigger overall health picture, because this is a, like, health is a privilege, like sort of a quote unquote problem of privilege that we get for the rest of our lives, right? Like staying healthy is a privilege, and it's something that we're always going to be working with. Like, it's not like you lose weight and you get to your quote unquote perfect or ideal weight and then you stop thinking about your health. Like, this is always something that should be on our radar. So it's a long-term thing. And the other problem with weight loss goals is, like, if you do reach your weight loss goal, a lot of times what happens is people are like, oh, I made my goal. Well, I'll just stop. And they get off the bandwagon altogether, right? So it's like, okay, have a goal, but know that if you achieve your goal, that's part of a bigger picture, right? Like, if I'm training for a marathon, that's a goal. But once I achieve my running goal of the marathon, I don't stop working out. It's like, oh, I made this goal. Now, like, let's reassess for new goals. So I think diversifying your goals is important, and thinking about them as like one stop on a really long journey.
I like that. I like that because, yeah, unfortunately in my practice, I see a lot of folks that come in and that's their only goal. And I'm like, no, we need to diversify. There's so many other things, but there's also, with a lot of what's happening online, is that we've just got these random workouts that just repeat and they don't have a purpose. They don't have a goal. And I love that you're working with folks with MS and Parkinson's and all those different conditions, because every single one of us has our thing, right? Whether it's we just want to get stronger, or whether it's we have like an autoimmune condition, hypothyroidism, whatever it may be. And then our, you know, that should be part of your fitness goal. How are you going to work that in and get to your end point? And then the other big thing, which I'm sure you're doing because you're talking about consistency, is tracking and recording your outcomes and recording what's happening each month.
Absolutely. You know, I think it's, again, we go back to this sort of awareness and intentionality of fitness. I think that being tracking your progress in any way, like for some people, progress could be tracked. Like, it could be sleep, it could be energy, it could just be that you say, like, I moved my 10,000 steps. So it doesn't have to be, your progress doesn't have to be at the gym being like, well, I bench pressed, you know, 95 pounds and then 96 pounds. Like, you have to find your version of fit and you have to find your version of tracking. So that goes with everything from food to exercise to sleep. So I'll give you an example of food, right? For some people, tracking food can be very helpful to be very detailed. So say, like, you know, I ate this for breakfast, I ate this for lunch, I ate this, you know, I drank this much water, very, very detailed. Because often we underestimate our slightly less than ideal habits and we overestimate our healthy habits, right? But for some people, for a lot of people, especially women, that really detailed tracking, it can create a not great relationship to your body and health and food, especially if you have a history of disordered eating. So one of the ways that I use with my clients to track their food is I call it the X versus O journal. So you have an O on your page for any meal or snack. If you ate when you were hungry, you stopped when you were full, and you ate unprocessed, homemade stuff, not a lot of sugar, and you kind of listen to your body and listen to your signals, then you just put an X through the circle. You don't have to actually write down, I ate one apple, I ate some chicken, right? But you do have to write it down if you ate when you were not hungry, if you ate past full, if you ate sugary foods, if you ate dessert, if you ate processed foods, then you write down what you ate, but not just what you ate, but what you were feeling when you ate, why you maybe ate those things. And then you can create some systems to set yourself up for success. Like, let's say you're saying, okay, I don't want to have a chocolate bar every 3 o'clock at lunch. So then you end up having the chocolate bar. So then you write it down and then you say, okay, why did I do this? Did I not have a good enough lunch? Maybe I need some healthy fats at lunch. Should I not be bringing the chocolate bar into my house? Do I need more water? So then you're still getting the awareness, and then you can create intentional choices about that data, but it's not as specific as like I had half a cup of rice. So, but that's a great example of, I think the writing things down and being accountable to yourself is really important, but it's in the way that works for you and in a way that really honors like your history and your goals and your emotional needs.
Oh, wow. Yes, that makes huge sense, because I think a lot of the traditional ways of tracking, really, if you do have an eating disorder, set you up for one. And sometimes if you don't, they almost do.
Absolutely, yeah. So you have to know yourself. But I do think you're right that some type of an accountability is really key, you know, to yourself. Or maybe you join a group, or maybe you have like a fitness buddy that every Sunday you email back and forth with that person and you say, like, these are my plans for the week. This is what I'm going to work out. You know, I'm going to really try to have 5 fruits and vegetables a day minimum. I'm going to drink this amount of water. But however you're being intentional in your tracking, I think one of the important things to realize is that you have to create systems in advance to set your future self up for success, meaning emotions come and go. So motivation is an emotion, meaning, you know, you say, okay, I'm going to be really motivated on Monday. I'm going to work out. And then Monday comes and you're not that motivated. So you don't work out unless you've set up a system. So you can't just rely on those moments of motivation to keep you fit. What you have to do is, in moments of motivation, you have to set up systems that set your future self up for success. So when you're feeling really motivated, you say, okay, I'm going to schedule these 3 workouts. I know that it's really hard for me to get up in the morning, so I'm going to schedule to go for a walk with a friend or run with a friend, or I'm going to sign up for a Pilates class so I've spent money so I know I actually show up to do it, right? Or I know that my trigger food is chocolate almonds, so I'm not going to bring chocolate almonds into my house. Whatever your system is to set you up for success, like, know you, do you, thrive again, like in your lane, but be intentional about the system. So when you're not as motivated, when you're sad, when you're depressed, when you're angry, you are able to still make the choices that are going to make you proud and happy and fulfilled.
I like that. I like that. I noticed that on your website, you actually are offering an accountability buddy service to folks.
That's one example. I mean, you can have a friend that you don't pay, or you can have me that you do pay. That's mostly just because my client base is all full. Like, I'm not taking on one-on-one people. So I'm starting to offer accountability. Like, that's a buddy where you can sort of email and message me back and forth. The other thing that I offer that can be really useful is I have group coaching. So there are 5-week group coaching sessions where we meet once a week on Zoom. The groups are about 10 people. And you get like a little lecture from me, and we have a discussion, and then you set a goal for the week. And then throughout the week, I email back and forth with you regarding that goal. And then the next week that we meet on Zoom, you sort of say like, okay, well, my goal was to drink 5 glasses of water. I didn't do it. And then we discuss, okay, so what's the growth moment behind that? Like, why didn't you have to drink the water? Like, what system could you set up that could make you drink more water? So then I might share my system that I use, which is I don't allow myself to have my first cup of coffee in the morning without having a big 750 milliliter of water. And then I don't allow myself to have my lunch before I've had another big thing of water. And then I don't allow myself to have my dinner before I've had another thing. So those are the systems that have set myself up. That's not that I'm saying that everybody should use that, but it's about being intentional. So we each week we sort of have growth moments with the class, and then you decide if you're going to keep your goal from last week, or you're going to move on to another goal, or you're going to do multiple goals. So that's one way to get an accountability buddy with me and sort of create a community with the 10 other people on the Zoom coaching. But there's lots of ways to have an accountability buddy. You know, you can have it with your spouse. You could say to the person, you're going to go for a walk 30 minutes after dinner every night, and talk about, you know, the choices that you made that day that you want to reproduce, and the choices that you made that day that you want to eliminate, and then create systems that will help you reproduce them or eliminate them, right? So that's a great example. Or create a challenge with your family where you sort of count steps, and then the person who gets the most steps over the week gets to pick family movie night, or however you want to make it. As long as you have that intention and the awareness, that's the key.
I like that. I like that. Intention and awareness. So another concept of intention and awareness related to fitness and just health in general is gamifying. And that's something that you're a master at. And I would love to hear a little bit more on gamifying things and how you approach looking at workouts. Because maybe say someone has their accountability buddy and they have things set up, but boy, even with the accountability buddy, they're finding that they just can't seem to get that, muster up that, you know, intention and the desire to want to either work out or even just do healthy habits that day. What would gamifying do for someone?
Yeah. So gamification is a huge umbrella concept that starts with actually a mindset of opting into your health challenge. So I think one of the biggest problems for people is that health is this sort of like have to do thing that they're like, oh, I don't want to. And when it's more of an obligation. Whereas when you play a game, you've opted into the struggle, right? It's like if you're playing a video game, you know, people will say to me all the time, like, oh, that video game's not hard enough. I had to go up a level. Like that's, and they're like, they like the fact that they're challenging themselves more. And so this, it's an attitude of, yes, this health thing is going to be a challenge, but I'm opting into the challenge versus like, oh, I hit a roadblock and I might as well quit. Like you don't quit in a game when you hit a roadblock. You're like, yes, roadblock. Like, how do I find a solution? You know, plan A failed, but I'll do plan B or plan C or plan D. So part of it is just adopting this mindset that health is going to have struggles. Inherent to health is struggles. So if you have the expectation that this is going to be an easy breezy thing, then you're setting yourself up for failure. If you set yourself up for success with this idea of like, yeah, every day I'm going to have like, there's going to be health villains. There's going to be people pushing food on me. And guess what? I have to be superhuman and say like, nope, thank you very much. I appreciate that you love me and you're trying to give me this food, but you know what? I'm going to say no. Or there's going to be that sticky chair that's like holding you back from going for a workout. And you have to be able to say like, sticky chair, you're my villain and I'm stronger than you, right? So part of it is also just like the self-talk that you can have if it's helpful for you. So every version of gamification is not going to work for every person, and that's fine. Again, you find your gamification fit. So for me, I find it very helpful to, I call myself sometimes like Buffy the Fitness Slayer. And I'm like, I am, like if I'm finding it really hard to do something. So I'm like, okay, what would Buffy do? Like I've embraced that challenge of like fighting these villains and hitting every roadblock and then being like, I'm going to find like a plan C or plan D. So that's one version of it. The other version is literally actually playing games. So there are studies that show that if you play a video game that with an avatar that looks like you, you're more likely to seamlessly fit fitness into the rest of your life. So if you're into video games, make sure the avatar looks like you. If you like games like Candy Crush or Tetris, things that are like very visual, you can actually use that. Play 3 minutes of that when you're having a craving for a food, and it will reduce your craving by about 25% because the games take up that visual center of your brain, the part of the brain that's like visualizing the cupcake. So instead you play Candy Crush and it takes that slight desire away. So there's those type of ways that you can use games as well. You could gamificate like on your phone, keeping track of like we were talking about before. So keeping track of your workouts and say, okay, when I've done 10 days in a row of moving, I get to have a bath or I get to buy a new workout shirt. You could get gamification with your family, as I said before, of like saying, okay, the family challenges who can do the most push-ups or who can take the most steps. You can, when we all go back to work in person, there can be like gamification with everybody at work right now. We're, as I said, we're in the isolation, but you could do it remotely as well. Like even though you're not seeing your coworkers, you could all say that you're going to track your steps or, you know, the person gets a prize for the most innovative way of exercising, or every day at noon, all of your coworkers are going to get together and play some music and dance and then, you know, have a challenge of who can have the best dance moves. It's just really, honestly, the gamification is just having some fun with this, because we often, as I said, we think of exercise as an obligation and nobody likes obligations. When you frame it that way, it just brings out this like adolescent rebellion in you where it's sort of like, screw you, like I don't want to do this. Whereas it is a privilege. So if you can say to yourself, this is something I get to do, this is a game, this is a struggle that I want to, you know, to come out as the victor, it just makes it more fun.
Makes sense. It makes sense. I like the challenges. I like the sticky chair.
I know, right? Yeah. Well, for me, it's my sticky bed. I find it very hard to get up in the morning, especially during this COVID. Like I normally I don't have so much time getting up, but I've had a hard time over the last couple of months because I've just been sort of, I think, psychologically more exhausted, as we all have. We have sort of like a baseline, higher baseline level of exhaustion and anxiety. And so I have had to really gamify getting up in the morning. So I've been setting my alarm like farther away from my bed. And then I've actually been playing my, making my alarm different songs that I like. So then when I have to get out of bed to turn off the song, turn off the alarm, by the time I get to my alarm to turn it off, like I love Britney Spears. So if Britney Spears is playing, I kind of start to like do a little bit of a dance as I get to my alarm. And then by the time I get to the alarm, I'm sort of more awake and I'm a little bit dancy. And then I'm like, oh, I might as well just go work out. Like I'm already up. I'm in a little bit better mood. So that's worked for me, you know, but you guys, as I said, find your version of gamification, whatever it is for you that works.
That's hilarious. I'm like visualizing you right now.
You know, like my bum sort of like wiggling in the morning as I'm like half asleep.
I like it though. I mean, I think there's a lot of folks that'll tell you, like, if you can give like 5 minutes to your workout when you're not motivated, usually you're going to have a pretty darn good workout. You're going to stick with it. But I love the fact, like, even before you even get to the workout, if you get yourself.
Totally. Well, I think so. It's funny, 5 minutes. So I always say I have a, what's called my 10-minute rule that I use with my clients. And everybody says it's very helpful. I know it's extremely helpful. I think that often it's finding the ignition energy to get going is the hardest part about any workout, right? So I always say to myself, Kathleen, you have to do your workout for 10 minutes. If after 10 minutes you want to quit, you've done 10 minutes, and 10 minutes is always better than 0 minutes. But 99.999% of the time, by the time you do 10 minutes, you're like, oh, I might as well just finish the rest of this, right? But the couple times that I have stopped after 10 minutes, cool. It's better than doing nothing. And at least I feel like I've given it sort of like the college try, right? Like I've given it my best. And some days it doesn't work. But honestly, in 20 years of working out, I think I've only ever stopped like twice. And it's been because I like have legitimately not been feeling well. Most of the time you get going and then you're like, you know what? This feels pretty good. Like I'm going to keep running or lifting or whatever. And then you finish and you feel really good about yourself. You have the pride that you followed through on your goals.
I think that's a really good thing for folks to hear about that, you know, 10 minute goal, but also that, you know, if you are legitimately sick, it's not worth it pushing yourself. And I think
absolutely
a lot of folks don't recover well just from their previous days if they've had an extremely stressful day the day prior or maybe that morning and say you're working out in the afternoon or whatever it may be. I think really listening to your body and maybe trying and then realizing, you know, okay, yeah, I really don't feel well. I think it's big for folks to connect because I think a lot of folks that I see, you know, pushing themselves too hard sometimes when they shouldn't be.
Yeah. Or maybe they need a different type of workout. Like they need some stretching or some yoga or like, I think for me, I find it sometimes hard to know, like, am I really just not wanting to do the workout and will I feel better when I start? Or am I legitimately like, will this workout not be good for my body? So once I've done 10 minutes, if I don't feel better, I usually can be like, oh, I actually am fighting something or my body would rather have like needs this rest day. Like, cause listen, recovery is really important. Exercise is only a positive stress on the body if you give it the recovery that it needs. So sometimes I will do 10 minutes and I'm like, you know what, legit, what I really need more than an hour run is, you know, 20 minutes of gentle yoga. But at least I've tried that initial 10 minutes and then I'm like, okay, yoga. Like I don't feel badly about that at all because I really am, as you said, I'm listening to what my body needs. I'm not self-sabotaging. And I think that's the problem is that if you're somebody who often self-sabotages, it's like kind of like the boy who cried wolf, right? Like if you're constantly being like, oh, I'm not feeling well, I'm not going to work out. Or like, you know, I'm tired, I can't work out or whatever, whatever. Then when you actually really legit are not feeling well and you don't want to work out, it's hard to believe in that truth. Mm-hmm. So I think that the more you can push through the days where it's just self-sabotage and actually work out, then the more you'll actually be able to trust when you are legitimately sick, right? You have to sort of prove to yourself that you're the type of person who does a workout even when you don't feel like it. So then you can believe and trust yourself enough when you actually are sick.
I like that. I like that. That's a smart way to go about it. Cause yeah, I think you definitely could get into that crying wolf business a little bit too much at the beginning for sure. So Kathleen, tell us a little bit about your books, because the Finding Your Fit and Your Fittest Future Self are very intriguing. And I think a lot of folks would love to hear a quick kind of synopsis of which book would be, you know, the one you'd recommend starting with. And in terms of, you know, brief details, which one would be geared towards which type of person or interest, maybe, for example?
Yeah. Well, I think that if you've never worked out before, or if you've sort of dabbled in working out and you've never found the fit that works for you, the Finding Your Fit is the key. It's the messaging really is that it has to be a non-negotiable that you move, but how you move is up to you. Go through the four fitness personalities, the gym bunny, the home workout, the competitive multitasker, and the competitive bunny. And it's a lot about just sort of like self-talk and mantras and how you can reframe. I talk about the 10-minute rule. But it's not overly specific. So if you're somebody who has worked out a lot, like if you've already bought into the idea that daily motion is so important for your mood and your body, and like if you're the person who's like, yeah, I got to go for a run, I don't miss my run, well, then you don't need the first book. What you need is the second book. So the second book, Your Fittest Future Self, divides the three pillars of health into, so it's your workout mix, your nutrition mix, and your mindset mix. Because I really believe that mindset is the key between sort of wanting to work out and actually doing it. And then it helps you break down what are the components of each of those mixes. So if in a workout mix, it helps you decide, like, are you doing enough cardio? Are you doing enough strength? Are you doing enough flexibility? And where you might tweak that mix. With the nutrition, it takes you through, I don't know, something like 30 different diets. And then it says, like, here are the pros of this and here are the cons of that. With, again, with the idea that it's all about creating the mix that works for you. So there's no one diet for everybody. And for most people, there's not even one diet for them. It's about finding, like, what are the pros of each of the different eating styles that you can incorporate that are going to help you be the best version of you, to be your fittest future self. And then the mindset mix is the same idea. There's so many ways to talk yourself into exercise. There's so many ways to do self-talk, mindset, you know, meditation. But it's about, again, it's figuring out the version of that that works for you. What version of meditation might work for you? Maybe you don't want a formal meditation practice. Maybe it's about just deep, mindful breathing. Maybe it's about analyzing your self-talk and getting rid of that sort of evil roommate that's in your head, that's belittling you and making you actually like self-sabotage all the time. So it's about creating the mix that works for you. My best friend, Emily, and I were sitting having pedicures, and she's the one who actually inspired the book. So we're sitting and she's talking about, she's like, so, you know, tell me, should I be doing intermittent fasting? And I was like, well, here's the pros and here's the cons. And she's like, okay, tell me about this workout. Should I be doing that? And I was like, here's the pros and here's the cons. So we're talking about, and I kept going back, like I was very political about every answer. Like, it wasn't like, yes, do this or don't do this. It was like, well, this might work for you. And these are the reasons why. And she kind of turned to me and she goes, you know, Kathleen, that's your next book. And I was like, what are you talking about? She's like, well, your next book is that there's no one size fits all, and that there's pros and cons to every workout and every diet plan. And it's about understanding the pros that work for you and using those to create the fitter version of you that you want to be. And I was like, okay, cool. So then I wrote the book.
I love
good
it.
Good to have a good friend, eh? Like, she's amazing. She's in PR and marketing. So she's often really good at taking, like, I have these sort of big concepts that I'm, you know, I can sort of talk about for hours. And she's like, okay, let's drill this down. Like, what does that actually mean? So she's great. I really appreciate having her in my life.
Everyone needs a friend like that. You scored.
I did. In fact, she's promised, yes, I said it's my birthday. So she's doing a drive-by tonight where she's driving by to sing me happy birthday from her car from 7 feet away. So I'm very lucky.
Oh, that's awesome. I love it. I love it. That is so cute. Well, gosh, we have talked about so many different things related to health and fitness, and I hope that we've given folks a really good idea of some things they could do to just get started. Now, everyone can find you, yes, at KathleenTrotter.com,
yes.
But where else do you hang out besides there? Instagram, Facebook, where else can folks?
All the socials, but I think primarily. primarily Instagram and Facebook. So Fit by Kathleen T is my name. And I'm trying really hard to be on both of those platforms and, you know, post useful links. And I definitely love when people reach out to me and we can chat. And as you said earlier, not all fitness professionals on the socials, you know, have the background and the knowledge that's sort of important. So if you have particular questions, you know, reach out. If you want to send me a link to a different workout and be like, do you think this is safe or not or whatever, I'm happy to sort of vet the workouts for you. But I always love hearing from people. And I think the website has some great resources. I have a what I'm reading section on the website. So if you've liked any of the things that I've talked about, you know, like the James Clear book, for example, there's a review of that book on the website. You know, I love, you know, there's a review of Brené Brown's book and Gretchen Rubin. And so lots of different amazing people who've influenced me over the years. And I also have a COVID sanity pack on the website. So just different resources that can be useful during this crazy time. And I have a pocket of joy section on the website as well. So, cause I really believe in sort of creating and looking for opportunities to be happy and make you feel good in this, again, in this crazy, crazy world. So if you're looking for some joy, you can go on the website and search that section.
I love it. I really like the COVID-19 pack. Like, that's like nice stuff. And I think really good quality stuff. And I think even going forward, you know, this is always going to be something that's changed. I think it is a catalyst that's changed kind of how we work as a society. And I think having some version of the survival pack over will be like so huge for
so
you.
So useful. Yeah. Well, I think what's interesting just to end on is just this idea of like, I feel like COVID and this isolation has just really, it's been an amplification of a lot of issues that sort of quote unquote truths in health that we've always had to deal with. And now we've just had to deal with it so much more, right? Like this idea of not letting your emotions dictate your behavior is really important. Having realistic expectations, scheduling, creating systems, you know, balancing, having compassion for yourself, but also holding yourself really accountable, having awareness, you know, creating your habits by design versus default. Like all of those things are things that we've always had to be, it has to be present in our health journey, but now it's just like, bam, like a way bigger amplification of them, especially the habits, right? Like we're always creating habits, but the question is, are you going to create them by default or by design? And this is a really good opportunity. Like your life, all of our lives have changed so much just by the fact that we're at home and, you know, like everything's so different. So this is a great opportunity to say like, yeah, it's different. So I can really purposely create some new habits by design that really honor who I am and serve my goals. But the problem is if you don't do it with intention, as we've talked about for this last half an hour, then things just sort of quote unquote happen. Like you're always going to be creating habits. So take this opportunity to design the life that you want.
Oh my goodness. That is such a great way to end this podcast, folks. I can't even say any better. So Kathleen, thank you for planting that seed in the mind.
My absolute pleasure. Thanks for having me on. This has been super fun.
Well, I sincerely appreciate it. And I will put all of our notes at drjkrausnd.com and thehealthfixpodcast.com. So all of you guys can head over there and get a hold of all of the info that Kathleen has to offer. So you guys have survived another episode of The Health Fix. Have a great day, whatever you're doing.
Subscribe, rate, and share info.